Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
What a way to start the first ever Leeds United fan show on Love Sport. We are marching on together. Yes, we are. I'm Matt Beadle. I'm with you until 10 p.m. this evening. And now it's time, as I said, for the Leeds United fan show. I'm joined in the studio by John McKenzie of All Stats, aren't we? And Ben Whitehall. How are we, chaps?
Yeah, really good. It's just like being in Elland Road, that wasn't it?
There we go. You can just feel the walls. You can feel the vibrations in the studio.
It's pumped. Shivers down my spine.
Well, gents, it's great to have you here. It's great to have the Leeds United fan show on Love Sport. And things are good, right? 10 points from 12, a third clean sheet for Kiko Kassia. I see Adam Forshaw said that a big message has been sent out to the Championship. Times are good at Elland Road.
Yeah, it's wonderful. I think there's a lot of Leeds fans who are a little bit... feeling a little bit shaky coming in this season because of obviously what happened at the end of last season. But as something we'll talk about later on. One of the things I focus on is stats and tactics. And one of the monikers that you have when you do that is trust the process. And I was secretly fairly confident that we would be okay this season. And it's been really, really good to see that's actually panning out.
Yeah, in terms of the quality of football, Ben, are you happy with what you're seeing?
Yeah, very much so. I mean, you know, as John said, things have continued very much in the same vein. You know, we're playing it from the back. There's a possession-based approach. You know, I didn't have the faith that he did, that things were going to not go south this season. But, you know, really pleased to see that, you know, players like Bamford and Forshaw coming through at the start of the season. It's really exciting.
What do you make of those quotes from Forshaw saying that a big message, we've sent a big message out? Because we are four games in. Can a big message be sent out that early in the season?
I think for me, the really important thing about what we've done at the beginning of the season is that we've tightened up on the things that we were bad at last season. We have come out and we've been, I think, a little bit more pragmatic than we were last season. I mean, last season we came out and we were very gung-ho. We would go for goals and there was no shame in our attacking approach. But this season, it's been all about control. And we've barely let up, given up any shots on target. Like against Brentford in midweek, we gave up one shot on target, which was from outside of the box. And what we're seeing is a sort of ebb and flow of the game is that Leeds are controlling the game and then pushing for goals in the last few minutes when they need them. So we saw that again against Brentford where the goal came in the 81st minute. So for me, I'm happy to see that calm, controlled approach, which is we dominate possession, we dominate the ball, and we when you do that as a team, you know that you're going to give away counter-attacks, but we're absorbing the pressure from counter-attacks as well. So it's all about actually approaching this season, I think, in that way, that we aren't going to have games like Wigan last season where and Derby as well, where we did concede goals on the counter-attack, and we looked very shaky there.
I mean, it's going to be nervy in that sense, and exciting. And that approach, like you say there, in terms of condensing the play and not having too much attacking threat until the last moments of the game, we saw in midweek, of course, against Brentford, the wonderful goal, well, a wonderful goal, wonderful moment, I should say, with Eddie Nketiah. But is there a danger that you put all your eggs in that basket and you think, crikey, we've got 20 minutes to go and we've got to get a win here?
I mean, it's not something you want as a fan, for sure. But, I mean, I think that the Leeds' whole approach is about reaping the rewards in the last quarter of the game. You know, the possession that they have in every game of last season, you know, they just didn't take the chances and they weren't scoring the goals they were expected to in a game. So, you know, I feel like as a fan, it's not going to be great. It's going to be tense. It's going to be nervy. But I expect to see the likes of Nketiah and Costa and Bamford to kind of put away those chances.
They both started on the bench, of course, against Brentford. Is that a case of purely of Bielsa basically saying you need to earn your right to be in the starting lineup?
I think it's partly that. I also think that the Bielsa system is all based around positional play, which isn't simply just knowing where you're supposed to be, like standing in relative to everyone else. It's all about interchanges and rotations, and it's not quite so simple as being able to turn up and have a couple of training sessions and suddenly pick it up. And part of the reason I think why we're seeing Leeds do so well this season is because they've had a whole season to play Bielsa's style, and we've seen the benefits from that, particularly in the midfield areas. We've been able to have Calvin Phillips, Adam Forshaw, and Matthijs Klik all in those positions for the whole season so far, which we rarely did in any combination last season. I think that comes down to it. But yeah, I think with there is that attitude that you have to earn your place, or no one is bigger than the team. It may be a better way of putting it. But at the same time, I think what we've said before is about control first. Once you've got that control, then you can bring on the big guns at the end when you're pushing for 10 minutes.
Well, Nketiah certainly is a big gun. A dream come true. He described it as scoring that goal. I mean, 35,000+ fans in Elland Road, just under 35,000. You saw the stuff from Ian Wright. Eddie. You even saw a tweet, right, from Birmingham, bizarrely, who seemed to like a tweet that Leeds put out. What was that all about? I didn't understand that.
Yeah, I mean, I think a savvy social media producer at Leeds has spotted that the, some poor soul at Birmingham has liked a tweet that they shouldn't have done. I think that's what it comes down to. But, it's great to have the buzz around Leeds that we're seeing. Like, you know, the fact that Wrighty's putting out videos on his way to the ground, and his celebrations, that's great for the club. And I think, Nketiah seems to have kind of drunk the Leeds Kool-Aid, actually. And, his comments on his first day, talking about Bielsa, talking about the club, the fact that he chose Leeds and Arsenal chose Leeds to be his destination. I think, that's a real testament to the work that Victor Orta and, Radrizzani and Bielsa have done.
Yeah, regarding the tweet, that is clearly it seems like that is someone who works in the social media department who has both accounts. He's has his own account on his phone, yeah, and he's forgotten to switch them.
Yeah.
And now he's getting...
We've all done that.
Yeah, yeah, we've definitely all done that. And just sticking on Nketiah, John, I think we're going to see a guy who's going to score a lot of goals, I think, in the Championship this season. This is a guy, and I saw him a lot at Arsenal. He's an 18-yard box man. He's going to be in that box, classic fox in the box, as it were, Javier Hernandez type player who's just going to score goals.
Yeah, what's been really interesting is actually seeing he scored it on his actual debut, which was in the Carabao Cup, and the goal that he scored there was almost exactly the same as the one that was scored against Brentford. So it's great to see that he's finding himself. Obviously, both goals were tap-ins, but as Bielsa said in the post-match press conferences, it's hard work getting into those positions as well. It's not just simply about finding yourself there. You've got to make the effort to get there as well. And I think that's something that Nketiah will add to. And it's nice, I think, balancing him off with Bamford. Bamford is a player who does like to drop deep and involve himself in the build-up play a little bit. So it'll be nice to have those two as a foil against one another.
So do you think they can play together? Bamford's got three this season. Do you think they can play as a pair?
Yeah, for sure. I think we've seen them already play in a 3-5-2 on a couple of occasions late on in games. They did it against Salford as well. Obviously, that will depend on when they're playing. I think teams who are usually playing two strikers, but against Brentford, who had the front three, they Leeds did shift to a sort of 3-5-2 in the last few minutes, and it allowed them then to really target the Brentford left back area, which was an area that we on our show had pointed out that actually that relationship between Ethan Pinnock and Rico Henry was the weak link. And we actually saw in the game Henry as a left wing back, he actually sat a lot closer to Pinnock, and they stymied Leeds a little bit in the first half, which is why the first half was quite stodgy in many respects. But once Leeds switched that formation into the 3-5-2, and they had Costa on the right wing as well, that really broke Brentford apart. So I think we'll probably see that in the last 10 minutes of games quite a lot this season.
And just on the Nketiah goal, I think it was fascinating to see his movements as the ball went down the right. What you had was two Brentford centre-backs at the kind of near post. You had Bamford almost going to the near post looking for that ball, and he just kind of opened himself up and he gravitated towards the back post because he knew that ball was going to come again. And I think that really was a movement that we hadn't seen a lot from Leeds strikers in the last year, unless you had Harrison coming around the back. And so that's another option for Leeds for sure.
Yeah, I think to the untrained eye, that's just someone, he just scores tap-ins, it's easy. Yeah. But that is understanding exactly where he needs to be in that box, isn't it? You mentioned left-backs there, John. Ben, Mr. Alioski, got a little outing, of course, in the week. Barry Douglas looks like he might not be fit for the weekend as well. You've done some work on them.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of did a profile for the Square Ball at the end of last year on Barry Douglas, and I think he's going to be missed, basically. I think, you know, he was kind of Leeds' marquee signing off the back of his promotion campaign with Wolves. He'd assisted, I think, 18 goals that season for them. He'd scored 5, he was on corners, he was on free kicks. And Leeds just really didn't see the best of him. He played 45 minutes in 2019 after injuring himself just before Christmas. And luckily we had Alioski, and he's, I think, a really able and deputy for Douglas. But I just think Douglas offers a kind of balance and a style of play that Leeds really miss when he's not there. So I'm slightly worried that he's injured so soon after that really serious injury that he incurred against Millwall. And so fingers crossed it doesn't take too long before he comes back.
And I guess it all depends on what kind of system Bielsa is definitely going to play. If Alioski does play, Noel Whelan, an ex-Leeds player, has had some interesting things to say about Alioski this week. And he said that he doesn't see him as a winger. He thinks there's better players and better wingers than Alioski. He favours Jamie Shackleton in that position. And it's quite interesting. He said he's frustrating. He drives me up the wall.
Yeah, he is frustrating. There's one thing that I noticed on the game on Wednesday. I mean, Alioski started off as a winger and he's moved back into the basically a fullback position now, I think, is what he's considered at. And Bielsa always talks about having two players in each position. So I think now Alioski is considered the backup player for Barry Douglas. But watching the game yesterday, so frustrating, because so much of what Leeds do at the moment is they overload in order to isolate, is what the tacticians call it. They focus a lot of their build-up play around Pablo Hernandez on the right. A lot of the players gravitate towards him. And that leaves space on the left for Harrison and Douglas. And we see a lot of interplay between those two. And the game against Brentford, what we were seeing was Alioski hitting crosses into the box rather than linking up with Harrison. Now, that may be the case that that Bielsa told them to do that. I'd be surprised if that was the case. And it just felt for me that we lacked a little bit from that, because it does start looking a little bit hopeless in the end. You're sort of hammering balls into the boxes and we're just not seeing anything coming from it.
Mm. Kiko Kasir as well. I just want to touch on him. This is a guy who... it's great for the EFL, in my opinion. It's just someone that just relates to the fans. We saw the handing back of the pie at Salford, I believe. You saw him after the goal against Brentford. He was high-fiving the fans. He's really taken to being a Leeds player, hasn't he? When you talk about Nketiah drinking the Leeds Kool-Aid, yeah, Kasir is drinking pints of it.
No, it's true. It's you know, there's not many similarities between Madrid and Leeds, but you know, he seems to have found some of that. And you know, he's had a rocky start. You know, there's, you know, a few concerns at the back of last season. Obviously, the game against Derby didn't help that at all. And, you know, the thought of it still makes me quite sad deep down. I'm really not over that. But, you know, he's made a couple of really good saves against Brentford and he seems solid. And like you said at the top of the show, the clean sheets are there and building up. So, you know, with Ben White in front of him and a really established system, I think he'll be okay.
I've spoken about this a lot before on the show, actually, in terms of how a player can be a bit clever in relating to the fans and kind of being a bit pally with the fans and almost being a bit of a cult hero. We're seeing it now with, say, Kolasinac at Arsenal. You guess he can probably do nothing wrong now after what happened with him and Mesut Ozil. They love him there because of the bravery that he showed. He's kind of an Arsenal hero, as it were. Kasir, is there a danger that... I mean, are you happy with him being the number one going forward? Can you see him being solid for Leeds this season?
Yeah, it's a tricky one because I'm with Ben. You know, the flashbacks to some of the things he did last season. Even in the opening game against Bristol City, there was moments where you're thinking, why is he coming out? Why does he always feel the need to command his penalty area in every scenario? It doesn't ever seem to be any situation where he'll think, right, maybe a little bit of calmness here would be good. But I think as the season has gone on, we have controlled the game so much that it hasn't mattered so much. We're using him as a sweeper keeper. His passing has really come on this season. Some of his passing has been, almost faultless, I think, in some games. Very, very close to having a complete pass percentage, and that makes a huge difference for Leeds. That's what we needed in a goalkeeper. We are the sort of team who are conceding very few shots on target. And so what you and I think Ben, we were talking before we came on air, Ben was saying, you know, Kike Kessié had more touches than I think any Brentford player in the game on Wednesday. So when that's the situation, when you're making one save a game, and the majority of what you're doing is moving the ball around, it's he's really, really fundamental for that.
Yeah, more accurate passes, I think, as well, than any other Brentford player in that game in the week. Well, this is the Leeds Fan Show on Love Sport. And if that's a stat, there's plenty more coming up after this.
Love Sport.
This is Love Sport and the Leeds Fan Show, the first ever Leeds Fan Show on Love Sport with John McKenzie of All Stats, aren't we? And Ben Whitehall. I am Matt Beadle. We're with you through to 9 p.m. this evening. John, I'm going to do something that's going to be a bit cliche, mate.
Go on.
I'm going to go ski ba 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 da boop. You're the stat man.
Can I leave? Am I locked in here?
I really didn't want to do it, but I just felt I had to. It was in me. This urge was in me. But listen, you are from All Stats, Aren't We? And I'm fascinated by this on a personal level, because there's so much debate around stats in the modern game now, and some of it is a bit too much, and you think that that's not a really decent case for presenting a certain argument. But in other cases, like you've already spoken about on this show already in the first segment, could already tell that you were applying stats, you know, that were definitely a really good insight into the way that Leeds are playing. Just explain a bit about what it is that you do and why you've chosen to do it.
Yeah, so All Stats on We is just a Leeds fan channel, really, that we started a couple of months ago now, and it's really taken off quite well. I was surprised at how much uptake we had on it. Basically, what we do is our tagline is we just look at Leeds United from a more statistical and tactical approach. There's plenty of great fan material out there for people who want maybe more traditional approaches to football media. We've already mentioned the Square Ball, but there's other podcasts out there as well. But for me, I'm someone who has always been quite interested in the mechanics of the game. Like, what's going? I spent a lot of time when I was at university coaching the university's women's team. So I was interested about how you can actually determine by looking at the stats how well you're actually doing as a coach. Is there any way that you can sort of quantify it more than just saying, well, we won, so we must have been doing something right? And that sort of carried over into my experiences of watching Leeds. And so one of the things that I do as a Leeds fan is I'm interested in looking at the stats and the tactics behind what's going on, just again, and so it's more like the science of the game, right? Sort of wanting to know what's going on beneath the bonnet of football a little bit more. I would say, I mean, we get a lot of people who tweet us saying, oh, you know, stats are rubbish, you know, like at the end of the day, points is all that matters or whatever, and we get a lot of stuff like that. But and one of the things I always try and point out is I say, look, the first time I watch the game, I watch it as a fan. I'm when we put out previews and reviews of each game, which are tactically based. So I say, this is what the opposition lined up as, here's what they were trying to do, here's what Leeds were trying to do to counter that, and et cetera, et cetera. I only ever write those previews and reviews after, or particularly the reviews, after I've watched the game as a fan. And I have to watch it again, because when I'm watching it as a fan, I don't really focus on any of that because I can't. I'm so caught up in the game. So I don't want anyone to come across All Stats on Me and think, you know, this is just a pretentious guy who is telling people that there's better ways to watch football than the ways that they've spent their whole lives doing. I can assure you, I'm watching football the same way that you are most of the time. But I do think that it does offer really interesting insights into what's going on, not least because Marcelo Bielsa is a tactical guru. He knows what he's doing, and also he will be employing people to do tactical analysis as well. And so I'm just trying to open the door a little bit onto that other side of the game, so people can sort of get a sense of what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, it's an absolutely massive part of the game now. I think Spygate taught us anything. It was that statistical analysis is huge in football now. And I think that you're right. In some senses, yes, it is a results-based business. And ultimately, if no stat applies to anything at all and you've won 1-0 in the last minute, it doesn't matter. The fans will go home happy. But clubs employ people now specifically for that statistical side. There are certain systems in place at certain clubs whereby they will be able to unearth a gem in some faraway country because his statistics are exactly what they're looking for. So they certainly play a huge part in the game, don't they, Ben?
Yeah, totally. And, you know, I think it shouldn't have taken Bielsa to get up in front of the nation's press and show everyone his spreadsheet to do that. But, you know, I think in that one afternoon he made kind of almost stats cool in football. I think there's a lot of kind of apologising for it in some senses. You know, the way that John looks at football and the way I like to look at football as well is sometimes deemed to be kind of too geeky or too reverent sometimes, but I think it's just an alternative approach. And, you know, like you say about picking up players, you know, Victor Orta at Leeds has been shown over the last couple of years to do that with a great success, you know. Mm. There's a number of players coming through that were completely off the radar of a lot of clubs, and he has shown to be that picking up them early is really the kind of trick. Mm. And so I don't think it should be sniffed at all, and I'm glad John's doing it from a Leeds perspective, because that was woefully missing a couple of years ago.
I think there is a real growing desire for this type of content as well, and I think people have got bored and a bit fed up of the, well, yeah, he's a big fella. Oh, yeah, he'll win headers. Oh, yeah, he'll get the ball in the back of the net. Don't you worry about that. Well, that's not really telling us anything. And when you watch replays, oh, you can watch, he's just taken him on, he swung it in, and, yeah, he's in the back of the net. Well, I can see that happening. Break it down. Of course, the likes of Gary Neville and Jamie Carragher have ripped up the rule book in terms of what we see on TV. But I was looking at your Twitter feed, John, at All Stats Aren't We, and there's some really good stuff in terms of what you said regarding the breaking down of the right-back role and the left-back role against Brentford. I mean... Mm. As an everyday football fan, an armchair football fan, you wouldn't really notice that until someone points it out.
Yeah, Pablo Hernandez is really interesting in the Brentford game. We put a lot of people criticising Pablo Hernandez in the Brentford game, and rightly so. Like his final third passing was poor. He wasn't making progressive passes, and because Leeds were trying to go through that channel, as we've talked about, it really meant that Leeds looked quite toothless in the first half. However, the Leeds fans just sort of took that to be, well, Pablo's off the boil. So one of my colleagues at All Stats, and we just tweeted the StatsZone passing statistics, just a pass map showing all of Pablo Hernandez's passes, all the ones that he'd made and all the ones that he hadn't made, just to show that, you know, there's clearly something going on, because all of the final third passes were the ones that were poor. It wasn't that he was poor passing all over the pitch. And we had someone replied being like, yeah, well, you know, you can fall back on the stats all you want, but, you know, I'm going to use my eyes. And I said, look, this is literally a map of the passes that he's made. This is what you saw. All we're trying to do with something like that, as simple as a pass map, is just show you all at once all of those passes that you saw in time, and just to make it a little bit easier for you to say, oh, actually, well, what can this tell us about the way that Pablo Hernandez was playing? So, yeah, well, all we're trying to do is we're taking a lot of the time talking points and saying, what do the stats say? We have a gut feeling about this. What do the stats say? One of my favourite players at Leeds is and everyone will laugh at this because it's become a bit parodic, but I really like Adam Forshaw, and he was vilified last year by a lot of Leeds fans, and in my opinion, he's been the most important player this season for Leeds. And the reason why I believe that was a lot to do with the stats. I looked at him and thought, you know, I think he's really neat and tidy on the ball. He's doing really, really good work. Let's go and look at the stats and see whether or not they back that up. So that's what I'm doing. I'm using my eyes, I'm looking at things, and if there's something that maybe I think, oh, is that what's going on here, then I can use the stats, and it usually gives me a helping hand to see what's going on under the surface.
And just on Forshaw, John, what changes have you seen in the way he's playing this year versus last year? Is the style different? Is it partly positional?
Yeah, with Forshaw this year, and we mentioned it already, so much of it is to do with the orientation of the three midfielders for me. We very rarely had Forshaw, Calvin Phillips sitting deep, and then Forshaw ahead of him, and then Click slightly further forward of him. And the reason why we didn't have him was for various, I mean, there was various reasons. There were suspensions, there were injuries, et cetera, et cetera. We lost Calvin Phillips for a bit, then we lost Forshaw, and they were both sort of filling in that four place. So much of what is going on now is to do with the fact that we are able to control the game because we're able to control space. And that comes from the fact that we've got three players now who understand the system, who move the way that they're supposed to be moving, and that's fine. But for me, I think what Forshaw does that's really great is he's just so neat and tidy on the ball. He picks the ball up. He picks the ball up, and he's always taking the ball into a space where he's going to be able to make a pass. He's taking it out of danger, so he's always protecting the ball as well. And it's just little things like that really don't show up unless you're really focusing on what it is that he does, and the stats really show that up. So Forshaw didn't have terrible stats last season. It was, I think, a lot more of it was to do with the fact that the positional play that Leeds were doing just wasn't quite working, and a lot of the time, a lot of the criticisms are he slows the play down, and I think that's totally I think that's a very important thing for him to be doing, because that he is the tempo controller. So a lot of people think he's slowing down play that should be quick, when Bielsa is telling him, "We want you to control the play here. We are building up the play. We are about possession. We're not about quick attack." So there's little things like that where you're sort of thinking, well, why might that be the case? Why is it that Bielsa that Forshaw looks a little bit slower maybe than maybe some of the other players? Is that intentional? Is that something that he's been told to do by Bielsa, etc.? So yeah, it gives you a little bit more angles onto the game.
No, absolutely. It's fascinating stuff. And these are the kind of stats that you want to hear. As a football fan, you want to hear this, because there's nothing more aggravating than being in a WhatsApp group or certain websites and certain Twitter feeds that chuck out a ridiculous comparison stat that a certain player, Sergio Romero, has won a European trophy at Man United, but David De Gea hasn't. When it comes down to trophies, stats are irrelevant for me, because some of the worst players in the world have managed to win Champions Leagues and Premier Leagues, etc., etc. It's about the team around them. My question to you, Ben, is... is there a case where statistical analysis can go too far?
I don't think there is. You know, I think there is. I think there's masses of scope for, you know, really diving into the detail. I think Premier League fantasy football has been a big role in that, actually, and people are having to dig in this detail themselves to go up against their mates and claim victory in those senses as well. So I think people are doing it more, they're seeing it more, they're exposed to it from the likes of John and others. I think data out of context can be slightly damaging, you know, and I guess that's where social media can possibly be a bit of a negative, because you take a stat out of context, you know, you've only got 280 characters and you can misrepresent an idea. But I think the kind of stuff that John and others are doing, where you're almost telling a story and putting that in context, I think is really important, and there's a lot of scope to do much more, I think.
Agree with that, John?
Yeah, I do. Look, and what I would say is that a lot of people say context to me a lot of the time, and what they mean by that usually is we just want to stop talking about stats.
But it's the code word.
Look, data and stats in football, they're not important, really. I mean, they are if you're a manager, but most fans aren't managers and they don't want to be managers, and that's fine. The only times where I get a little bit prickly is when people say things where, if I look at the stats and I say Forshaw's a great example. If people just say, well, Forshaw's just a terrible player, and that kind of annoys me, because I want to say, well, what do you mean by that? Like, how could you possibly determine something like that without then saying that something like stats or tactics are important? Because obviously they function in a particular way in the game. And so if you're saying he's bad, then it's fine for me then to come in and say, well, the stats disagree with you and the tactics disagree with you. So yeah, I'm happy for people to say data is unimportant when you're a fan. That I totally agree with you. I don't really think about the data that much when I'm watching that first time as a fan. But as soon as you're starting to make qualifying comments about players, then I have every right then to say, well, interestingly, the stats suggest that this is the case, or the tactically, this could be why he's playing in this way.
I'd like to see it when you do that with a certain fan. That'd be good to watch that argument. And you watch the game. So you watch the games back to back. You watch them again. You get home and watch it again.
Yeah, I watch the game live usually, and then I will, depending on how the game's gone, I'll give myself a certain cooling off period. To be honest, if it goes really well, I have to calm down. So I'll usually wait 12 hours, usually the next day. And if the game's gone really badly, then the same thing. Have to take a while to cool down as well.
Right, we're going to be talking about Stoke next, it's the Leeds Fan Show on Love Sport.
This is Love Sport.
It is indeed the opposition view on Love Sport, the Leeds Fan Show right now. Joining me is John McKenzie of All Stats, aren't we? And Ben Whitehall, the first ever Leeds Fan Show on Love Sport. We've got about 15 minutes or so left of the show. No, that's wrong. My maths is terrible. We've got about 24 minutes left of the show. And I'm delighted to say that we've got David Cowlishaw from the Wizards of Drivel podcast on the line. How are you doing, David?
I'm very well, guys. How are you?
Good, thank you. Great to have you on. Leeds face Stoke this weekend. Not the best start to the season for Stoke. What can we expect?
Hopefully a reaction from us after a pretty horrendous display against Preston midweek. It's been a really strange season, because despite the fact we're bottom with 1 point, I don't think we've actually played that badly, probably Preston aside. We've just been a combination of desperately unlucky and desperately poor in front of goal. And I think the kind of XG stats will back that up, and it's just been kind of a tale of missed penalties, Jack Butland throwing the ball in the back of the net, injuries to key players. So it's just one thing's piling on top of the other at the moment for us.
Hey Dave, it's John. I've got a question about Nathan Jones. Obviously he's made comments about Jack Butland this week that make him look like he's throwing him under the bus a little bit. What do you think about his approach to the dressing room this season based on those first four games?
It's an interesting one because I get the sense he's trying to build a dressing room that he feels he can control a bit better. He's signed kind of perhaps more lower league journeymen and players from League One, players he's perhaps trying to recreate the vibe he had at Luton. And it's been quite telling that the two players who've struggled the most recently for us have been Jack Butland and Joe Allen, who were obviously Premier League players on paper, Premier League wages definitely. And I wonder if we perhaps needed to completely change the entire dressing room as well, because we've kind of got this mix now between the Premier League egos, if you like, and then the lower league ones. With regard to the Butland comments, I think he may have kind of rushed in the heat of the moment, but at the same time, Butland made four mistakes that have led to goals this season in four games. So I'm not particularly concerned that he's thrown Butland under the bus, because I think Jack Butland will come back from this. I think he's a good enough goalkeeper to come back from this. I do think he needs time away from the starting 11, but I wouldn't be rushing to criticise Jones for what he said about Butland, really.
Hi, David, it's Ben here. Just on the topic of goalkeepers, I know that you signed Adam Davis from Barnsley in the summer, who was pretty good shot stopper in a pretty poor team. Do you expect him to come in, or you know, are you pretty happy with Butland as it stands?
I'd be looking to drop Butland, but Adam Davis is an odd situation purely because he's not been on the bench. He's not been the number two to Butland this season. It's been Adam Federici. From what I can glean from half quotes in press conferences, that's because Davis isn't up to the fitness levels that Jones wants. That's as much as Jones has been willing to say on it, but I don't know if there's anything else going on there. But it does seem strange that we almost expected Davis to be first choice when it looked like Jack Butland might be leaving. So a bit strange there. So I would expect, if Butland is dropped tomorrow, that Federici would come in.
And of the other like signings you made in the summer, who are you liking? Who are you liking the look of?
Quite a few of them, to be fair. We've seen flashes from Mark Duffy when he's come on. He looks a good creative player. But I think that the main one that kind of has universally united the fan base has been Lee Gregory from Millwall, who has missed big chances in front of goal, but has done everything else right in terms of forward play, holding the ball up, being a foil for Scott Hogan. He's kind of reminding fans a lot of Johnny Walters in the Tony Pulis era, so he's definitely got that going for him. But I think on the whole, with the exception of perhaps the fullbacks, the signings we've made this season have been good. Cameron Carter-Vickers looks a good player, Liam Lindsay looks a good player, but it just hasn't quite clicked yet, and the longer we go without a win, it's going to be tougher to see Nathan Jones keeping his job, unfortunately.
Nathan Jones has been using 4-4-2 with the midfield diamond, which is what he used at Luton. How do you feel about that? How do the fans feel about that? Is there a frustration with that formation, or is that simply bred by the fact that the results haven't been good?
There is a growing frustration with the diamond that I understand. There have been occasions already where we've looked too open in midfield and teams have attacked us through the middle, and the diamond has been blamed for that, but I would also say that we've conceded 10 goals from 14 shots this season, so it hasn't been open floodgates at Stoke. There's clearly been a decent level of defensive discipline. It's when it comes to the shots themselves that we're letting ourselves down through the aforementioned bad keeping and kind of individual mistakes, as you saw at Preston as well. So there is a growing call for Nathan Jones to drop his diamond formation that he does seem really wedded to. My concern is more that he's so wedded to it that
he might not be willing to tweak it or try something else out. But I don't blame the Diamond for our current predicament. I blame individual mistakes and the kind of also the timing of these mistakes as well. QPR and Preston, Jack Butland has made a huge error within 10 minutes of the game starting, and that can have a real demoralising effect pretty much from kickoff. So it's been a kind of psychological thing for us as well to get over, and that's more of a concern for me than the tactics at the moment.
David, can I just ask you about Nathan Jones? And, you know, watching him in his post-match interviews already this season, he looks, I would say, like a man who feels like he's under a little bit of pressure. He said, you know, we just got to come through this. He has said, look, he's saying all the right things. I've seen a massive difference in our play. It just has to eventually get to that. But we saw him quite vigorously biting his nails on the touchline last weekend. And, you know, is this a man who's under pressure if he doesn't get a result this weekend?
Yeah, definitely. The kind of Jones scepticism is growing and getting more vociferous. I think it's not because we've started this season so badly so much as we only won 3 games in about 23 games at the end of last season when Jones took over from Rowett. And admittedly, you can excuse that by saying, OK, it's not Nathan Jones' team and there wasn't really anything to play for at the end of the last season. But when you add this season onto last season and we're still going a really long time without a win, then yeah, I think he is feeling the pressure. I'm personally not a big fan of his, and I'm desperate for him to succeed, but I would be very surprised if he wasn't feeling a bit. I think he's a very intense character. He's very much wedded to football. He kind of lives and breathes it, so when things aren't going well, he is going to seem very agitated and kind of very a difficult character, and that's perhaps come across in his interviews and stuff recently as well. So I'm feeling for him at the moment, but there's not going to be much more sympathy if the results carry on.
Dave, just a question about how the opening of the season has changed your expectations of where Stoke are going to end up finishing. What are you thinking is going to be the best case scenario now from here on in?
Well, I think my expectations differ to a lot of Stoke fans, and I think this might be where a lot of the frustration is coming from for a lot of fans. That I was content with mid-table again this season if I could see maybe more tangible signs of progress. We were creating more chances, the football was better to watch, we scored more goals, which is a big thing we didn't do last season. I think I said to my dad before the season started, I'd take 11th now at the start, and I know for a lot of fans that's kind of unambitious and perhaps not the right talk they want to be hearing. They want to be hearing playoffs promotion. But I still think there is enough time for us to... Well, there's enough time for us to finish anywhere, to be totally honest. I don't think the first 4 games have really altered what I think we'll do this season. Mm. Obviously, when you win, when you've only got 1 point from 4 games, sorry, that there is obviously going to be immediate talk of relegation, but I think perhaps more in hope than expectation that we will be fine. And I wouldn't say I've deferred much from that 11th place prediction based on what I've seen so far.
Yeah, and I've got an XG table in front of me which suggests that Stoke should be around 7th position based on their XG. So there's clearly some balancing work to be done in terms of what the expectations are. But just one more question for me, and that's what's your prediction for the game? How do you expect it to go?
Yeah, so it was a bit of a strange one last season with Nathan Jones's first league win for us, and we planned a master plan and a travel lodge that we actually ditched the Diamond for that game and ended up beating Leeds. But I think with the way you guys have started the season, and if you score early, I think the crowd will perhaps get on our backs and it can be very difficult for us to come back from. But I think it'll be a draw. We always tend to concede, so 1-1 or 2-2, I reckon.
David Cowlishaw, thank you very much for joining us. Really enjoyed that, buddy.
No worries. Cheers, guys.
Yeah, that was David Cowlishaw of the splendidly named podcast, Wizards of Drivel. Interesting stuff there, gents, especially about Jack Butland as well. And, you know, Marco Bielsa, I imagine, would be saying, pepper him. If he does play, pepper him. And if he doesn't play, what does that mean for Jack Butland? because everybody expected him to leave in the summer, and he's made quite a few errors already at the start of this season. And if he's being dropped for Stoke City in the Championship, that does not bode well for his future prospects, especially with the European Championships coming up next summer.
Yeah, he's had really bad ankle injuries, I think, that have really held him back. And there was a point at which he was on the cusp of breaking into the England team at one point, and had that bad ankle injury, I think, in England international. And from that point onwards, I think he's always just had that sort of psychological thing in the back of his mind, which I don't think is anything more than thinking, you know, I've got to impress here to get back to where I was. I can only imagine how difficult it must be for a player to think, I'm now... literally my body has failed, and that's put me right at the bottom of the pile. And so how players deal with that mental anguish is always interesting. But
yeah, it'll be either him, Adam Federici, as David mentioned there, or of course Adam Davies, who was very impressive for Barnsley last season. Right, this is the Leeds United fan show on Love Sport. We've got about 13 minutes to go.
Love Sport.
This is the Leeds United fan show on Love Sport with myself, Matt Beadle, and John McKenzie of All Stats Aren't We, joined by Ben Whitehall in the studio. Guys, we are 4 games in, 10 points from a possible 12. Are we happy? Are we good? Are we excited? When we look at the season ahead, who do you think is going to challenge Leeds United? Are Leeds United going to be at the top or there or thereabouts this in May?
Is it 10 points or is it 2 points drop, though? That's
interestingly to look at it. And by the way, when we're on that call with David Cowlishaw, by the way, I love the fact that you said, I've got some XG tables in front of me. I would have expected nothing less, John.
I should shout out to Billy Davis. Billy Reid, sorry. He's compiling those for us this season. So, but they're really interesting to look at, because basically it just takes you the XG for and against and works out roughly what the results should have been, with a bit of tolerances built in. And it really interesting to see Stoke were really high up the table even until the Preston result as well. So I think Stoke will be okay this season. I think that's a really good way of looking at who's going to be doing well. Fulham obviously looking okay there. West Brom looking good as well. Sheffield Wednesday actually well worth their position in the table as well. So, but I think the team that I'm worried about is going to be Fulham. I think Fulham don't have the greatest manager, but they do have the greatest squad. And you know, there's an extent to which you can get a long way by having game-changing players who can just come in and make that difference. We talk about XG tables all the time, but the XG values are based on what the average player taking that chance would produce. And obviously Fulham don't have average players. They have players who are all going to be overperforming their XG as well. So there's a sense in which by playing really good players, you can sort of game the system a little bit, because you have players like Caviero who will score screamers. You have players like Mitrovic who will just put everything in the net.
Ben, with regards to strength and depth, is that something Leeds fans need to worry about? We saw a lot of big names depart in the club. Pontus Janssen, actually... We haven't talked about Pontus Janssen yet. The reaction in the week, obviously you were playing Brentford. What was that like with him coming back to Elland Road?
Well, I think from what I saw, it was pretty... he was pretty well received. You know, I saw pictures of Cooper giving him a big hug at the end of the game. Bielsa asked the fans not to boo him, and I think that's pretty well respected. I take the view that, you know, we don't actually owe Pontus anything. I think... players leave clubs that they've been adored and they've been handsomely paid, and then they kind of expect a certain reverence. And I think, you know, Pontus was a great servant. He connected really well with the fans. You know, we didn't get up last season. And if you look at the little instances where, you know, he came into the news, he swore on Sky Sports, he took his training kit off, you know, after Derby and sat on his own. You know, he's a bit of a troublemaker, and he really just didn't fit the kind of Bielsa mould. Leeds have this saying of side before self, and that doesn't resonate with Pontus. You know, he doesn't believe in that. He's a very ambitious guy from what we hear about him, and I think that only works if, you know, your ambitions align with his. You know, he's very much out for himself. So I think, my personal view is that, you know, we're better off without him. Ben White has come in, performed really, really well in the first kind of 5 games, and it's a stellar signing. And so I'm not very worried about it. But John and I slightly disagree on this. I think
I like it.
More wishing that he was still around a bit, I think.
What do you think? I don't know. I was quite happy to see him go. I'm the same. I as I said at the beginning, you know, the moniker that I hold to is trust the process. And Pontus is great, when you want blood and thunder and you want emotion and you want to see someone just pull out a sort of game-changing performance. But so much of what Leeds does now is based around this idea that as long as you do everything that's expected of you in the right way, that's enough. That's what we're trying to do. And side before self is that's basically what it translates into in Bielsa ball. And so for me, Pontus was great. He was a good defender. We'll miss his prowess in the air at set pieces. No one's denying that. But again, you know, as we've said all along, that it's all about the system. It's all about having players who are going to be able to. I mean, we've talked about Leeds being a high possession inside. They're not going to get pressed high by a lot of teams. And even if they are in first halves, they're going to be given so much more time on the ball. So you want your defender in that scenario to be like your goalkeeper, as we said. Like the goalkeeper's making one save a game, we want him to be good with his feet. It's the same with the defenders. If the defenders are making one tackle in the game or one interception in the game, and the rest of the time they're making 40, 50, 60 passes, you want your defenders to be very good on the ball. And Ben White is better on the ball than Pontus Janssen. And so for me, it's a totally fair exchange. That said, I think as Ben was saying, Pontus has been a great servant of the club. He was one of the bright sparks in the real doldrums of the Heckingbottom Christensen era, when there wasn't really much to cheer about, and then you did get him every once in a while making a challenge and then like cheering at the Kop end, and those things I appreciate him for. But in the long run, I want us to be playing good football, and I think moving him on, bringing in Ben White has done that. Guaranteed that we will.
He moved on, as did Kamar Roof as well. Obviously, Jack Clark didn't instantly return with the loan signings that you've made. Helder Costa, I believe, is with a view to a permanent move. Otherwise, you've brought in loan deals, Eddie Nketiah as well. Are you happy with the summer business, Ben?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you look at the bench that we have in these opening games, it's much, much stronger than at any point last season, I'd say. You know, to have the likes of Nketiah and Costa come on and, you know, be that kind of finisher, have that finisher role, and essentially kind of dial pace up and dial kind of the intensity up, is something we didn't really have last season. Jack Clark was probably the closest we had for just a few games, and obviously that led him to be bought by Spurs. So I'm much happy with that. You know, you've got Shackleton, who's another kind of year on. He's had a really good summer, performed really well for England at the under-20 Toulon tournament. So, you know, you look at that, and you know, a couple of the kind of signings, you've got Bogots, the kind of young Polish lad who's 17, who's played really well for the under-23s. And so you're looking pretty comfortable, I think, without any injuries. My worry is that if, you know, one or two of those players get injured early on, we're struggling, and we've maxed out on loan signings, and, you know, there's clearly no budget there. So we have to see how it goes.
Now, we're not going to do this every week on the Leeds Fan Show, but because it's the first one, I have to ask. We've been here before, gents. We've had good starts to the season. We've been there or thereabouts at the end of the campaign. Obviously, we saw that last season. Do you think this season could potentially be the one that sees Leeds United return to that top flight?
Yeah, I think so. And I think if it isn't, then we're going to be stepping backwards for sure. But as we've said, I said all along, trust the process. The process is working at the moment. The process is about controlling games. It is about making sure that we're not giving up too many chances and creating more ourselves, and then really turning the screw at the end of games. And I think, you know, there's no team that I've seen really that I'm worried about will cause us, or at least there's no two teams that I think will cause us to not get one of those top two promotion playoff spots, top two automatic promotion spots.
Sure, and we had David Cowlishaw obviously on from the Wizards of Dribble podcast. He thinks it's going to be a draw at the weekend. Stoke yet to win a game in the Championship this season. Ben, predictions?
Usually I'd say this is the type of game Leeds would lose. Bottom of the table, you know, we're flying high, playing great football. But I think this season is different, as John said, and I think we'll probably win 2-0.
2-0?
Yeah, and another Bamford goal.
Oh. Bamford and Nketiah would be perfect, wouldn't it?
That would be nice, yeah.
Yourself, John?
Yeah, I think, you know, actually looking at the way that the teams line up, you know, we've already mentioned the midfield diamond, the 4-4-2 midfield diamond that Stoke use. That will cause them to be very narrow, and Leeds are playing a very expansive football in terms of they're trying to hit. We've already mentioned overload to isolate. We know they're going to try and find Harrison and whoever's playing left back in those areas. they'll also be they've also been working hard at creating chances in the first half through the right hand side, through Hernandez, even long balls down the channel into Bamford. I think that Stoke will struggle to maintain the width precisely because they have that very narrow formation, and so it's again a question of what damage the Leeds can do to their fullback. So I'll say 2-0 as well, I think.
Okay, this is one of those rare instances, isn't it, where we have the double bubble of you playing him in the Carabao Cup as well. Afterwards, we saw that with Millwall and West Brom, of course. Different teams, different squads. Do you think Bielsa will go for?
Yeah, definitely. I think you know, some of those players I mentioned that have been sitting on the bench will get a run out. You know, you hope that you know, the likes of Bogots gets minutes as well, and I think, you know, that's good for the main squad as well, because it's going to be a tough season. You know, these games come thick and fast. Forshaw talked about it and Bamford's talked about it as well. There's positives to that, but, you know, it is exhausting. And Leeds want a good start to the season, and that means resting players in the cup.
Yeah, and we've already seen it in this little mini spurt that we've had where Bielsa has been very careful to protect certain players. So I think that a lot of that's to do with him wanting to make sure that those players get through that period without any injuries.
Absolutely. Well, this has been the first ever Leeds United fan show on Love Sport. Enjoyed it, gents?
Yeah, very much.
Great.
Good
fun.
Stuff. We will be back same time next week on Friday at 8 p.m. This is Love Sport.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.